Well, good morning, everyone. Again, my name is Janelle Schrag, and I'm a research associate at America's Essential Hospitals. It's really great to be here this morning. I'm very impressed by the turnout at 8:30 on the last day. And I'm looking forward to talking to you today about Medicaid waiver-based incentive programs, specifically looking at California, Massachusetts, and Texas, and then taking a deeper dive into some of the trends and health outcomes that we're seeing as a result of these programs. So I have no relationships to disclose. First, a little bit about my organization. America's Essential Hospitals is formerly known as the National Association of Public Hospitals, and we support over 250 safety net hospitals across the country. And I particularly work in the Essential Hospitals Institute, or EHI, as you'll see referenced throughout the slides. And we are the research and quality arm of the organization, so we focus on identifying best practices throughout our membership, conducting research, disseminating innovative strategies, and then helping our members with performance improvement. So this here's a map just to give you a little bit of an idea about our membership. We really are primarily urban hospitals. So the patient populations we're dealing with are usually low-income, minority, either underinsured or uninsured, or Medicaid. And so we focus very heavily on Medicaid waivers because it's pretty important policy for a lot of our membership. Many of our members are engaged in some kind of Medicaid waiver, whether it's an incentive program or something else. So this work really spans our whole organization. We focus very heavily on educational materials, research briefs, policy briefs, webinars, distance learning, in-person events, and then we are also very very much involved in the Massachusetts incentive program and their learning collaborative. So here, just to make this clear, there's three briefs that we have published about Medicaid incentive programs over the past 3 years. During this presentation, I'm predominantly going to talk about our 2014 brief. All of these are in the materials for the session, and I will probably touch on something that's in each and every one, but just so you know, I'm mostly talking about 2014. So with that said, today I'm going to talk about kind of the history and basics of incentive programs. Specifically looking at California, Massachusetts, and Texas. We'll look at the components of their incentive programs. And then I'll talk about the study we did last year. And then finally, I'll wrap up with the trends we're seeing in health improvement. So, okay, buckle up, everyone, because we're about to dive into some pretty intense policy. So waiver programs were a new option following the Affordable Care Act implementation. So they're federally funded through CMS under Section 1115 waivers. And they were originally used to support hospitals in transforming care for their Medicaid population. But as they've evolved over the past 5 years, we're really starting to see it be more about broader delivery system transformation, payment reform, and population health. So the first program which was approved was California's DSRIP in 2010. And so you might be asking, well, what's a DSRIP? And when we're talking about incentive programs, we're really talking about DSRIPs. And that stands for Delivery System Reform Incentive Payment. And the easiest way to describe what a DSRIP is that it is federally funded dollars, as I said, being provided to hospitals or health systems to improve their delivery systems, make their care more cost efficient, and make their care more patient centric. And the hospitals do this by implementing individual improvement projects throughout their departments. So they'll have, you know, a handful of improvement projects going on in different departments. And then those projects have associated metrics. So this is where the incentive part comes in, is that if the specific projects don't meet the metrics they've already set out to meet, then they don't get the funding. So it really is incentivized quality improvement and delivery system transformation. I'll also just say that each state is also required to have a learning collaborative for all their hospitals participating in their DSRIP. That looks different in some states, but it really is to make sure there's more broader collaboration across the state. So here is a current map of the states that are either implementing or planning a DSRIP. Is anyone here from any of these states? Okay, is anyone a clinician working in a hospital working on a DSRIP? Okay. Working on a DSRIP? Okay, cool. Where are you from?
New York.
New York, okay, great. You might be asking, well, why doesn't every state do this? And it really is a state-by-state basis. It depends a lot on the political environment happening in the state. For example, if it's a Medicaid expansion state, if the state has history with CMS already on Medicaid waivers, it's also a very rigorous application and negotiation process. So it really just depends if the state can and wants to do this. So New York is the most recent state to implement a DSRIP, and we have seen a lot of evolution come out of the New York model, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. But first, we'll take a closer look at California, Massachusetts, and Texas. So these were the three pioneer states for DSRIPs, and you can see that they're not alike. They have a lot of differences in terms of the number of hospitals that are participating and the scope of their transformation, and that's the case across the board. You'll never see two DSRIPs that are exactly the same. And so we pay a particular attention to these three states because they have the most data for us. They have 5 years under their belt now, give or take, and are really starting to see broader trends happening with their improvement projects as opposed to somebody that might only be 1 or 2 years in. So, for example, looking at some of the differences, Massachusetts, I'll point out, has a different name for their DSRIP. They go by DISTI, which is Delivery System Transformation Initiatives. You can also see they have a much smaller number of hospitals participating. They also have a transformation category specifically focusing on alternative payment models, to no surprise, because Massachusetts is working on a global payment budget. But I will point out that for some of the similarities, population-focused improvement is a similarity across the board, and that's the case too for other states implementing DSRIPs, and this is because population health is a major goal of DSRIPs. So the idea is that hospitals will work in their hospital to transform their delivery system, work across their hospital network to transform the network, and then go beyond the hospital walls out into their communities to really make that bigger change, which is more of a focus of the general healthcare reform we're seeing in the U.S. right now. So now moving on to the study we did last year. This was still a relatively new area for a lot of our hospitals, so we wanted to take a closer look at the experiences that our hospitals were having when it came to implementing a DSRIP. So we held three webinars with member hospitals in those pioneer states, as I mentioned, Santa Clara Valley Medical Center in California, Boston Medical Center in Massachusetts, and UT Health Northeast in Texas. And we asked each presenter to address six questions, which were more or less our research questions. And then we held the webinars, we transcribed them, and then we qualitatively analyzed them to inform our research brief. So here's a look at the questions we asked. First of all, we asked how they were measuring their outcomes, and what extent they were going beyond what was required of them measuring outcomes. We also asked what facilitators there were in implementing their DSRIP, as well as what barriers they faced and how they overcame them. We also asked them what they think hospitals should consider when implementing a DSRIP to ensure more sustainable success. And then we asked what the implications have been on other areas of their hospital. So beyond just their individual improvement projects, what spillover effects were they seeing, or any unanticipated consequences? And then finally, we asked them what practices they put in place for the sustainability of their achievements. So here's what we learned. We learned, first of all, that DSRIPs were really playing a major role in jumpstarting this transformation that may not have happened otherwise. Safety net hospitals are very resource constrained as far as finances and staff. So they usually don't have the ability to just, you know, implement 32 improvement projects across their hospital. So this really was critical funding for them to make these changes, following in line with how healthcare reform was going, to really better serve their patients. But with that, there were a lot of cultural changes that happened. With these improvement projects, a lot of people's roles and responsibilities change. There are also whole new data reporting standards that are very tedious. And this is something we've heard even beyond these three states from any of our members working on a DSRIP, that it's very challenging work and it's a huge transition to go through. However, they said that really having engaged leadership and having that collaboration both between project teams within their hospital and then also at the state level between the other hospitals really made a difference in kind of smoothing out that transition and mitigating those challenges. And then most importantly, what we heard from them was that the transformation is working and that they're starting to see these improvements happening. And then it's also really having a positive effect on population health outcomes. So I want to dive into that a little bit more because I think that's probably the most relevant thing to APHA is really to talk about how this is improving patients' health. So first of all, we're seeing a lot of improvements in clinical outcomes. For example, sepsis and HAPU are two very popular improvement projects across DSRIP hospitals, and we're seeing these improvements across the board. For example, Contra Costa was able to decrease their sepsis mortality rate by 9.2%. They were also able to bring their HAPU rates down to less than 1%. Also, process outcomes, such as readmissions, length of stay, care transitions, we're seeing improvements in these areas as well. For example, Boston Medical Center was able to reduce their readmissions by 9% by spreading their care transitions program called Project RED. And then also access outcomes, such as third next available appointment and primary care sites, implementing patient-centered medical homes. For example, again, Contra Costa was able to reduce their third next available appointment from 13 plus days down to 6 days. So a pretty major reduction, which is allowing better access for patients. And then also, like I said, patient-centered medical homes, implementing a medical home in itself is a huge task, and we're seeing hospitals being able to implement, you know, numerous clinics with a medical home, which really proves to show how essential this funding is for making something like that happen. And we know that medical homes in themselves have a lot of health benefits for patients. And then finally, population health improvements that we're seeing. You know, like I said, this really is a goal of the DSRIPs. This is a area that almost every DSRIP hospital is focusing on. And so, for example, we're seeing new clinics coming to low-income areas. For example, UT Health Northeast was able to build a brand new primary care clinic site, like literally from the ground, build a site to an area that previously had no primary care clinic. We're also seeing an increase in the provision of preventive medicine services, so dental care, cancer screening, we're seeing an increase in those services, not just because of specific improvement projects, but also because of just better patient and community engagement. Also, behavioral health integration is a huge priority for a lot of patients, a lot of hospitals. So we're seeing hospitals focusing on integrating primary care and behavioral health, and also standardizing behavioral health screening for all of their patients. And then finally, a fun one I like to talk about, pediatric asthma services. UT Health Northeast was able to replicate the Breathmobile model. I don't know if anyone is familiar with the Breathmobile, but it's basically a mobile asthma clinic that goes around to all the schools and helps kids learn to manage their asthma and has been shown to reduce missed school days, ER visits, time in the hospital. So it really is a an impressive population health model. So I know that was a lot of information, and I'll just try to wrap it up by saying that, first of all, DSRIPs have greatly evolved over the past 5 years. And like I said, New York is the newest model, and that model looks completely different than the California model. And it is even more focused on population health. It brings together hospitals and community health centers and other community stakeholders to really work together. It really focuses on building that infrastructure so that it's not just something that's happening in the hospitals, it's something that really is happening across the entire community and all the providers. And this is a model that we think will continue to be replicated in future DSRIPs. And with that, we are still waiting on a lot of results from other DSRIP states. These aren't projects that show results in 1 to 2 years, and it's really only that California, Massachusetts, and Texas have been implementing for so long that we can really start to make these conclusions. So we are anxiously awaiting what's going to be shown from the other states, particularly states like New York, that have this more population focused, population health focus. And then most importantly, I really want to emphasize how critical this funding is, especially for safety net providers who are caring for those most vulnerable patients that really do need this broader scope of services. So it's really important and goes to show kind of really the impacts of a health policy, that what it has on the patients, and you know what essential hospitals have been able to implement. So finally, from what we can see from California, Massachusetts, and Texas, these incentive programs are working, not only at the clinical level but also population level, and hopefully this is a policy that we continue to see, because it really is having a lot of impacts, but the, we're still waiting from CMS on some guidance on what's going to happen in the future. But here's my contact information. If anyone has any questions, please feel free to email me or call me. I also highly encourage everyone to visit our website. We have a lot of materials on Medicaid waivers. And then if you're in a state working on population health or public health, and you might have a hospital in your area working on a DSRIP, I highly encourage you to reach out to them, because I'm sure they would be thrilled to partner and really kind of make this more of a collaborative effort. So thank you very much. Mm-hmm.